This is In This League Overtime. Some of the best from Chris Welsh and Scott Bogman on the In This League Podcast Network and FNTSY. Now, it's time for OT.
I'm joined now by my guy, Jake Seeley. You can find him on the Twitter machine at AllInKid. You can find him on FNTSY Radio. He is the accuracy expert, so you may want to listen to what this guy says. Jake, how the hell are you, man?
I am doing terrific. How are you doing, sir?
Doing good. Are you ready to talk about football on April 5th?
Yes, because as soon as the baseball season finally starts is when I can dive full-fledged into my draft stuff, which I've been doing over the past week and will be doing for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, and, you know, in the draft stuff, the guy that's got to stand out to you the most is Saquon Barkley. And, you know, you just watch his tape compared to anybody else. It's night and day. And there are many, many good players, but he's clearly the best player in this draft. I mean, you got to agree with that, right?
No, there's no question about it. I don't know if you heard, but he might be a generational talent. I don't know if you've heard that. The funny thing was, so last year, that being 2017, at this time, when we were talking about draft and stuff like that, I was saying, keep an eye for next year. And because everything we talked about for last year's rookie class, and I said, next year's rookie class of running backs is going to be even better. And I said, the biggest thing is Saquon Barkley, and just know that he's probably the best draft prospect to come out since Adrian Peterson. Not the same style, but is the same type. He is a generational talent. And I was like, now I'm kicking myself. I said all these things because it's such the cliche. I haven't seen one word more overused this offseason than generational talent when it comes to him. But that's the thing. Is like, you know,
he probably is, though. Like,
that's what I was about to say. Is like, you know, we joke about that and it's become so passe to say it, but it's a truth. As much as it's an annoyance, it is true.
Right. And that's what, like, you know, on a couple episodes earlier, I talked to my guy, John Lobb, and I asked him where he put Barkley between Elliott and Todd Gurley. So if you had to rank all three of those guys coming out of college, and he actually had Barkley third. I have Barkley first. If you had to do that between Gurley, Zeke and Barkley, who would you like? What would your order be?
I would actually go Barkley, Gurley, Zeke. The only thing that could keep Barkley from being number one is I will admit one thing, his one flaw. And I think a lot of people are out there that have started to study draft prospects and have read stuff that's been out there so far will understand this and know where I'm coming from, is he doesn't finish well. And the fact is he doesn't finish well is because as big as he is, as strong as he is, and the fact that he can, he's not Ezekiel Elliott, and the fact that he's not going to drive through the defender. There's a difference between breaking tackles and slipping tackles.
Right,
he
right.
slips tackles. He's not running you over. He could, and I think he needs to add that. Now, I'm not saying he needs to pound every single defender that comes and squares up on him, but the fact is at the NFL level, you're going to get guys because of the speed of the game, because of the strength and everything like that, who are going to be able to square you up better than kids did in college. There's just no doubt about it. He's going to have to find that power, which he has. He just doesn't like to go to it. He'd much rather elude and slip the tackle, and he breaks the tackle by breaking arm tackles. He doesn't break the tackles by bowling through somebody. I think he can add that. He's never going to quite be Ezekiel Elliott. If he does, he's definitely definitively going to be number one. If he doesn't add that, I can see him slipping to almost a tie with Ezekiel Elliott, depending on which style you prefer. And I think that will depend on if the offense he's in. I think he'll succeed right. No matter where he is. But I think if he doesn't add that to his game, I think that's going to hold him back from being the number one.
Speaking of which, is Saquon going to be worth a first-round pick no matter what situation he ends up in? Obviously, most mocks and all the draft chatter and stuff have him going to the Browns at four or the Browns at one. But, you know, most likely it looks like they're going to use that pick for a quarterback.
Right.
The Giants at two are a possibility. If he goes past four, I'd be very, very surprised. But is he, even with Carlos Hyde there or any other situation, do you think that he's just a first rounder regardless of what team he winds up on?
Yeah, I absolutely do. Actually, so I did my way too early 2018 rankings. I've done it like three times now already. I've actually, so I do it after, like right before the Super Bowl, then afterwards by a few weeks, and then recently after the free agent signing. So, and every single time I've had Saquon Barkley at seventh, and that's before knowing the team. Now, if he ends up on a team like the Browns, he'd probably stay right there just because they do have Carlos Hyde. They did sign him, so he had that situation. If he ended up in the Giants, I'd probably bump him up a spot. If he slid further back and ends up on the Broncos, probably bumped up a spot. So I think depending on where he lands, he could actually move up. I don't see moving him down, put it that way. So I think he's at least number seven, if not potentially six or even five.
Man, and that's kind of from experience. I mean, you know, we've seen Fournette come out and Zeke come out, and a lot of people say, he's young, we've never seen him, I don't want to put him that high.
Oh, yeah. You remember Ezekiel Elliott, right? So he was somebody that, now, I had him at the same spot, like six or seven, before he came out when he was drafted by the Cowboys. The night of him, writing my draft right up, and I said, he's already top five by going to the Cowboys, potentially top three. And everybody's, he hasn't played it down in the NFL. I think you know this, Scott, but do you know that every single rookie in the history of football has never played it down in the NFL? Just in case.
Right? Oh, yeah. My God. I don't know
if you knew that.
Yeah, and I mean, look, you know, people were, I was kind of afraid of Kareem Hunt, not because Kareem Hunt isn't awesome, but because Spencer Ware was there, and you know, Spencer Ware got hurt, and that was it. Kareem Hunt off to the races. Alvin Kamara, obviously successful with Mark Ingram there. So, if you have a generational talent like Saquon Barkley, it doesn't really matter what situation he winds up in. He's going to be a very, very high pick. Like, if you wanted to take, you know, some of the guys that a lot of people are going to wind up putting behind him, ahead of him, I understand it, but I don't know. I think I'm going to reach for the upside in most cases.
You know what? If it wasn't such a long-winded, that'd be a great nickname. Saquon Generational Talent Barkley.
Saquon Generation. How about we just call him GT?
Hey, there you go.
Generational talent.
Or
Saquon.
The generation. Just to skip his name altogether.
God, there's no player that's adding up to be a bigger bust in
Generation
history, right?
B.
Oh, God. Are there any other running backs from this class that are going to be worth at least a second round pick, no matter the situation, or is everyone else, as far as running back goes, kind of team dependent?
No, I actually think there's two, in my opinion. And I think Darius Geis, no matter where he lands, is going to be a second round pick, similar to Leonard Fournette. And there's a lot of people out there who thought that, you know, you look at LSU like, oh, this is kind of a system situation with the success of Fournette and Geis and all that. The fact is, both of them are great talents.
Yeah,
and
it's a system because they recruit well.
Right. And so, you know what the funny thing is, similarly to Leonard Fournette, he's a decent pass catcher that people don't realize he's a decent pass catcher, because you want to talk about a system. The system doesn't really use their running backs in that type of fashion. It's just not really what they do.
They use their wide receivers in that kind of fashion.
Yeah, they don't use the passing game. So I think Geis, no matter where he lands, although I do think he'll end up somewhat like Fournette, where it's a lot more on the ground, even though he can pass catch, it's going to be a team that probably, because he's a rookie and where he comes in and so many shared backfields at this point, I do think he'll be sharing some with somebody.
Yeah.
The other one I would say is Rashad Penny. Now, I'm not saying that's 100%, though, because depending on what happens in the draft, we see running backs slip all the time. And while the team might end up with a terrific value, a la Kareem Hunt, if Spencer Ware doesn't get hurt, I'm not saying, like, I've believed in Kareem Hunt the entire time. I'm not saying that Kareem Hunt wasn't going to have a great season, but there might have been a 50-50 split. And that is the potential. Like, if Rashad Penny doesn't go high and ends up falling to a team that has other running back options and they use him as 50-50 and the other person doesn't ever get hurt, then that's a little bit tough. On talent alone, Rashad Penny should be, no matter where he lands. But I think only because of that, I would say the only one I will say definitively is Geis. Penny could definitely be there if he doesn't fall too far in the draft.
And I like Penny because he's a guy that, you know, he could wind up being that Alvin Kamara type of a dude, because the guy can really catch. I mean, he can really, really run too. You want to talk about systems, San Diego State, yeah, definitely a system. I was a big fan of Donnell Pumphrey coming out of San Diego State last season, but obviously he couldn't stay healthy. But yeah, I mean, like Rashad Penny's just like a yeah. He's 5'6", all right? There's no problem with being 5'6", all right? Especially, I love any guy that's just a couple inches shorter than me. So make me look tall. That's all I want, and be in the NFL. That's why Jose Altuve is my favorite baseball player. But Yeah, I mean, I love Penny. I think Penny is a little bit more dependent situation on the situation because Darius Geis is a lot like Leonard Fournette, like you said. He's I don't think that he's there with Fournette, but he's the type of dude that will just plow dudes over. I'm really excited to see where he winds up. We're looking at, I mean, just all the chatter recently has been about the quarterbacks because, you know, the Wunderlich test score, like that even matters. All these teams are trying to position themselves to maybe move up. You know, the Patriots just traded Brandon Cooks, and the chatter is they're going to try to move two first to move up to get one of these quarterbacks. It's difficult to place where we should be getting, you know, drafting quarterbacks in a rookies only draft. How far down would you put your first quarterback, and which one would it be? Because I'm trying to make like a top 10 for a rookie only draft, and I just have no quarterbacks in there.
Yeah, the thing is, it's like even if we're just doing redraft, I wouldn't even have a rookie quarterback inside my top 20. I mean, like I'm looking down right now, and even there, I have like Mariota, Derek Carr. If this is where you're going to take them, then if you talk about rookies only, it's the same thing. It's like even if you're doing a dynasty, I understand wanting to get your quarterback. And to be honest with you, looking long term, I would still probably go Sam Darnold first. I do think that if you look at the pure ability, he's got the best talent. He's got the most projectability. All that being said, I think no matter who you take, you need to accept the fact that it likely is not going to be somebody who helps you this year. Now, if the mock draft that we just saw recently come out and Josh Rosen ends up going to the Jets, I can see him playing. He's the most ready. He's the best pure pocket passer. He's the best, honestly, in my opinion, probably the best passer, period. And all those talks about his attitude and all that type of stuff, I think you've seen as well, is he just wants more. He's so knowledgeable and so talented.
He doesn't want to go to the Browns.
Well, that is true. Hey, would you want? Honestly, at this point, though, I would change my tune. I don't have a problem with the Browns at this point anymore. But that's the point. It's like he knows he wants to keep learning. And somebody likened it to like Aaron Rodgers. Is the guy wants you to tell him something new. Don't tell him the stuff you're telling a freshman in college. Like he already knows that. And I think that's where you get the attitude. That's where you get the frustration. I do like Baker Mayfield. I do have concerns. I mean, there's a reason that Drew Brees is a rare breed. And there's a reason that you don't see 6 foot quarterbacks succeed that much in the NFL. You know, you look at Russell Wilson, but he has a very good scrambling ability. I think there's a reason for that. It's sad, but it's true. Is when you have 6'7", 6'8" linemen standing right in front of you, you can't see over them. And then you have to force a 5 and 7
movie theater for me. It's always, you know, Yao Ming sits in front of me every single
always
time.
Always. I usually get that at basketball games. I usually don't get that to the movie theaters, but you know, that's the
it's
fact
because
of the
you're
matter
right behind the bench, of course, right?
Well, yeah I have that kind of cash. Yeah, you know that. I think we're talking about ODU. maybe that's the sort of one I go to the college game. That's better. Like, but the fact is, you know, now you're looking at shotgun, which honestly, you know, shotgun offense is, there's a stat, I forget, it was either like Graham Barfield or Scott Barrett or one of those guys who are always great at throwing those stats out there, was talking about how much the NFL has moved into the shotgun, how much more effective it's been actually for even running backs. So we might see that transition, which would help them, but it's a legitimate question. And then, you know, Lamar Jackson, that dual threat ability. But I think if you look at all that, like I said, I would take Darnold, and honestly, it probably would be around 9 or 10 before, because there's so many running backs in this draft class. And then wide receiver's a bit thin, but I think I'd be looking at around 8, 9, or 10, depending on what my team is, before I decided to take a quarterback.
Yeah, and it's tough because you don't want to be the guy that misses out on Deshaun Watson, right? Because Deshaun Watson looked incredible in the games he played, and we're hoping that he's not going to wind up being RG3 and you know, or Teddy Bridgewater and getting hurt all the time or anything like that. But it's just tough to know. What's that?
I said he's already on his third knee.
Yeah, I know. So it's just tough to know where to put these guys. And you know, this may be more of a, hey, Jake, help me out with my rankings kind of question here. But I just, you know, I guess more or less it just kind of depends on if you need a quarterback. Where your rankings are going to wind up going there. You already kind of mentioned this. The wide receiver class doesn't seem to be exciting to anyone, but I think there's a lot of talent here. Who are your top three, and do you have any sleeper wide receivers?
So my top three is honestly dependent on where they land. Like, I hate to
These
say
are
it.
The complete opposite of running backs, right? It really depends on where they land.
There is depth. That's the thing. There's just no top tier receivers. Right. And I think that's the difference. Is what we're saying is, like, you look at
There's
years
no
past
generational talent.
That's very true. There is no. But the thing is, I kind of almost have a top five that could just interchange depending on what happens.
Then you always go above and beyond. I love that.
So my five right now. Now, that also being said, is I release my full draft rankings next week. Being today's the 5th, so the 9th or the 10th they'll be out. So they might change a little bit. But as of today, Ridley, James Washington, Christian Kirk, DJ Moore, and Cortland Sutton. A little bit lower on Sutton than barely. But that's those are the five that I've been tossing around. And they're very tight, in my opinion. And it's also because I'm not as high as Ridley as most people, right. Despite I still have him number one. But it's just such a tight group that I've almost, like, I've gone one day where I've liked DJ more than James Washington. And the next day I'm like, you know what? I watched this a little bit more and I'm going to put James Washington back. And then it's like, all right, well, James Washington, you know, if you look at the size and what he gets away with, is this going to translate to the NFL? All right, let me put Christian Kirk. So those are my five. If you want to talk about sleepers, though, just to attack that question, I think it's another school that continually gets overlooked when it comes to wide receivers from there. And it was one where I was very high on Allen Robinson, and another one that I'm very upset of what happened with Tampa Bay. And now we're not going to get to see Chris Godwin this year again, but I'm going right back to the well with DeShaun Hamilton, who I think is, I actually know he is one of the best downfield, if not the best downfield receiver in this draft class. I think depending on where he lands, he could be a top 40 wide receiver as a rookie, but he's going to depend on where he lands because he's not going to go early in drafts.
You're listening to In This League Overtime. Some of the best from the In This League Podcast Network. Find all their shows and more of what you've heard at InThisLeague.com.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
You're listening to In This League Overtime. Some of the best from the In This League Podcast Network. Find all their shows and more of what you've heard at InThisLeague.com.
I like Dante Pettis' tape, but I'm not sold on him yet.
Yeah, he's basically like John Ross Light, which, you know, John right. Ross was a huge embarrassing failure last season. But of course, it was more because of Marvin Lewis and winding up on the Bengals than anything. I mean, it didn't help that his first touch went for a fumble. But, I like, and it's funny because I've heard DJ Moore as high as second. I think Mel Kiper might have DJ Moore first. I mean, that's a little bias since he's a big Maryland guy. But that's the crazy thing about this wide receiver class, because personally, me, I love Equanimee St. Brown. I don't think I'm getting his name right. I'm probably butchering it. I've heard
Say it again. I'll tell you.
Equanimeous. All right. Equanimeous St. Brown. I like him from Notre Dame because you watch his tape. It's not that impressive, but it's because the quarterback situation in Notre Dame was so terrible. And it's kind of the same thing with DJ Chark from LSU. DJ Chark, he was amazing in the Senior Bowl, and everybody talked about his great practices all week and that kind of stuff. And it's like, well, why didn't we hear about this before? And it's, you and I have already talked about that. That's why all the running backs coming out of LSU look amazing, because they have no quarterback to throw to these awesome wide receivers that they draft. I mean, Odell Beckham obviously was an athletic freak coming out of LSU, so he went in the first round. But if he had a quarterback throwing to him, obviously he would have gone much, much higher. So
see, my problem with My problem with Equanimeous is I feel like he's Jalen Strong to me. And the fact, well, no, here's, you'll understand why in a second. I think it's the three S's. It's the size, speed, and strength. And he has it. And he has that. And he has the moves. But he doesn't do great in tight coverage. And I think that we're getting enamored with the player and making excuses for him, similar to Jalen Strong. And I feel like if he never really develops, because he still needs to develop on his own right.
Yeah.
And you can very make wrong. The blame on the quarterback and saying, well, it's hard to develop when you have that kind of quarterback play. At the same time, I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm a Notre Dame fan and I've seen so much of them, and I'm starting I feel like I'm starting to dig my heels in, yeah, and maybe I'm going to be wrong for doing that. But it's just from what I've seen is like, I just don't want to make that say, because I was a Jalen Strong apologist, and I feel like I'm doing the same thing if I do it for Equanimeous and St. Brown.
Yeah, I mean, I just I watch his film, and this is probably just body type. He looks so much like AJ Green, you know. So I just get
so say we're getting enamored by his body and the combination.
Yeah, I mean, it's you definitely could be right, and I think Equanimeous St. Brown is very dependent on the situation, because and I don't think he's going to be one of these guys that comes out and is immediately successful.
He's ever going to go by St. Brown? Like, we'll ever say St. But like, I've never heard anybody just be like, you know how like we'll say, hey, Ridley or Washington or Kirk or what? Like, I don't see anybody that's ever just said, hey, you know who I really like in this draft class is St. Brown. Like, it's always Equanimeous St. Brown. You have to say all three names.
You have to say the name. What we did on our college fantasy football show was I just started calling him EQ. I was like, I'm not trying that. I was like,
oh, that's fine.
I was like, oh man, why can't I remember his name? The SNL guy. I don't know. He the in the Horrible Bosses movie when they had the Indian guy, and he's like, come on, man, your name's not Paul. Just tell us your name. And yeah, he's like, nope, I'm going to just say Paul because that name is an effing nightmare.
Yeah. So
that's what I went with for him in the college show. I just started calling him EQ.
Hey,
no one else is EQ, right?
No. Yeah.
You can't find anybody else. Last one I have here for you, and this, of course, I had to get one difficult one in here. What are the teams that are most desperately need a skill position player, and what is that position? So, like, if you wanted to say, like, Jets wide receiver, Jets quarterback, Jets general manager, you know, if you wanted to say, like, how would you put that as far as this draft class goes?
I definitely think the Bills need a wide receiver, especially with what happened with Zay Jones. Although at this day and age, it just seems like things should get thrown out 2 months later somehow and just get, you know, oh, by the way, we're not. Who was the one? It was just last week. Somebody just, was it Robbie Anderson or who was it? Yeah, it was Robbie Anderson. We're like, all right, we're not charging him anymore. Dismissed.
Yeah,
like,
that's what.
What we the were mentioning hell, man?
We were mentioning that on the Full 60 show, and I said, hey, great to see the little guy win one finally, right?
I was just like sitting there like, you know what? Good for me for fantasy purposes, because I actually own him in one dynasty league. But at the same time, I'm just like, there's
if
no
way. I said that to a cop, we'd
exactly.
be dead.
There's no effing way that any of us get away with that. And then it's like, good God. So, all right. Well, so Bills wide receiver. But I think that's obvious. I think we know the quarterback, the Bills, the Jets. We know those. Those are kind of obvious. So I would say with that, I think the Jets, though, don't need a wide receiver. I will say the Cowboys kind of filled their solution with the wide receiver by having Allen Hurns. So after that, I would say if they I don't know what Gettleman's doing, because I would say running back for the Giants. But at the same time, you know, he brings in Jonathan Stewart. They really haven't done much with Wayne Gallman. Orleans Darkwell was actually more impressive.
Like bringing in Jonathan Stewart is like putting a Band-Aid on, like, just a gushing, bleeding wound, right?
I was going to say, like, a dam or something.
I was trying to keep it to the Band-Aid, but kind of, a little bit.
But you know what? This is going to be the one that maybe people know. It's obvious. But I think that most people are like, oh, you know what? Yeah, you're right, because everybody's focused on the running back position for them and how big of a need it is. But let's talk about the fact that the Colts really need a wide receiver.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, like Ryan Grant, really? Ryan Grant. And I, you know, I feel bad for him. I mean, did that guy ever get dicked over by the Ravens? And then, but to be fair, 500 yards and 4 touchdowns is a breakout season. Like, I know you outplayed Terrell Pryor, but that was for another reason and the fit and all that type of stuff. And Josh Doctson had no kind of consistency. Finally, the fact he was even able to stay on the field. But they need a number 2 wide receiver. Bad. I mean, they definitely need a running back, but that's not, I would say that's not far behind.
Yeah, I think the reason you hear running back so much is because, you know, they seem to be in a position to wind up taking Barkley before the trade. But yeah, I mean, it's T.Y. Hilton and nobody at this point. Right. Ryan Grant is the 2, Chester Rogers. I mean, you know, they like the tight ends and they signed Eric Ebron and they still have Jack Doyle. So, but you're absolutely right. I mean, That is one of those where you kind of go, yeah, that's right. The one that keeps sticking out in my mind, and I think it's because I just don't believe in what Oakland has done, is Oakland and running back. You know, I know they still have Marshawn and they signed Doug Martin, but what is Doug Martin good for? 3 games, 4 games, and Marshawn Lynch is 100. So I just feel like Oakland, maybe not as far as, they're not as desperate as the Giants, but they got to get somebody in there, right?
You would think. I would definitely. And here's the biggest thing is this is written up by, what's his, not Jamie Eisenberg, Dave Richard for CBS wrote about it when the signing happened, when John Gruden was official, talked about the running back usage that he has in the past. And one, he doesn't use anybody that much of a bell cow, but 2, likes pass catching running backs. So immediately you would say, well, Marshawn Lynch doesn't fit. Well, right. Marshawn Lynch is still with this team for some reason. Took a pay cut to stay, everything like that. Doug Martin actually would be a little bit better of a fit, but we've seen 2 good seasons and 4 terrible ones, and those 2 good seasons were boosted by a couple great games and the rest of the season being eh. So I have no faith in Doug Martin. Jalen Richard, DeAndre Washington, he has no ties to those guys. He could come in, draft somebody. Those 2 could be gone by the time they hit training camp. So I'm with you. I wouldn't be surprised if the Raiders come out of the draft, or maybe even because the running backs are so deep, there ends up being undrafted running backs that are sitting out there with talent, and that there is a third person that's not Richard or Washington, and that would be the one that would intrigue me, honestly, the most, to take it like the late in drafts or maybe in best balls or something like that. The one other team I would say is, let's talk about wide receiver and running back, just like we did with the Colts. I mean, what's left with the Seahawks now?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly.
Yeah, Thomas Rawls is gone. So they have nothing.
Well, Chris Carson's healthy. Yeah. CJ Procise as of today, and Mike Davis as of today.
Yeah, I mean, you just want, like, why do they just keep taking every single injury prone running back? I mean,
and I could already hear, by the way, the Tyler Lockett supporters yelling at me through the headset for, like, I like Tyler Lockett, but
he's
the biggest,
a 3, you know,
that I've always said, like, hey, here's the biggest thing, you know what, even let's let's say they take Calvin Ridley somehow. It just, like, falls all the way down. I still wouldn't be that high, because this is what I've said for years on end about the Seahawks. People need to come to realize this, is they use their number 2 wide receiver almost like a running back by committee. Is they're not, like, their number 2, quote unquote, isn't a real number 2 because right. They're not on the field all the time. They rotate them for matchup
That's
opportunities.
That's why people like Tyler Lockett, because he'll occasionally give you that huge week.
Right. Right. And people just don't seem to realize that. Do the Rams need anybody else?
I think they're good for now.
You sure?
Well, we'll see. Maybe they need a new Wonderlic test for Jared Goff, because now he seems like a genius. You know, year 1, he seemed like the guy that didn't know that the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. Now he looks like, you know, dude that went to Harvard. He looks like Matt Burke.
I was still not sure that he does. I just think Sean McVay's a warlock. That's all. That's what I really think it comes down to.
He sold his soul. He was like, yeah. Belichick, where can I get that deal?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there anything else before we let you go that needs to be said about this draft class in particular? Anyone we didn't hit that you're really keying on?
Not as of yet. I will pimp my own stuff and say check it out next week.
Absolutely.
I would say, you know, running back wise, for a sleeper, and I think some people are already out there talking about him, is John Kelly intrigues me, depending on where he lands. I think Mark Walton has a lot of question marks.
I love Mark Walton.
I think that if he falls and ends up in a situation like Kamara, and I know that Kamara was like the one that everybody keeps saying. I will say that real quick. Everybody keeps saying Sony Michel is Kamara. Well, you know what? Sony Michel doesn't catch that much. Now, I think he has the ability, but go back and look at Sony Michel's numbers and his play. And yes, I understand the similarities that people want to draw play style wise, but let's chill a little bit in the fact that he's not going to come out and catch 60 passes next year. That being said, go back to it. I actually think Mark Walton might potentially have that kind of ability, because similar to Penny, as in somebody, if you get the ball into his hands, all of a sudden you blink and he's 20 yards downfield. I think he could be. That's the thing, though, is with these running backs, again, it comes back to what I said earlier. Like, even Kerryon Johnson and Royce Freeman and all the rest of them, I mean, you go down this list, and it's really going to depend on where these guys land. I mean, you go down to Nyheim Hines, and he could surprise, yeah, depending on if he's in the right team.
Yeah, he is a burner through and through. I mean, that's a dude that could wind up, you know, you talk about your I'm a Steelers fan, so I'll use this, your Willie Parker versus Chris Rainey upside. You know what, yeah, I mean? He could wind up being either one of those dudes.
Oh, can you guess which one? There's a hint early in the show if you want to guess which running back that I'm not that enamored with.
Is it Ronald Jones?
Nope. Josh Adams from Notre Dame. Yeah. That offensive line,
he's,
oh my
Garrett
God.
Blunt. I mean, you know.
Yeah, so like Josh Adams was like 10 yards downfield before somebody touched him half the time.
Yeah, I mean, he will run an MFR over, that's for sure.
What he will do, but if he has an offensive line with any question marks,
yeah,
forget about it.
He can't wind up in Seattle. You know what I mean? Like,
no.
He can't wind up there. He's got to wind up in a good situation. You know, he's got to wind up like in Pittsburgh, where, you know, Le'Veon Bell gets 8,000 carries and he can be a goal line type of dude. You know, that's the situation he needs to wind up in.
You just know, if Matt Forte was still around, put him on his team so he could vulture all the touchdowns.
Luckily, we get to, you know, no one had. I love Matt Forte, so I was a sucker taking him every year, but I'm kind of glad he's retired, so I don't have to fall into that trap anymore. So
are you a Matt Forte Hall of Fame?
You know, I would have to look at the numbers, but I mean, he's got to be fairly close.
I think he's fringe miss, but yeah. It's so close. It's just, it's tough.
I think after everything's said and done, there's just going to be so many running backs with better numbers than him. That he's probably not going to make it. I feel like that could wind up happening to Hines Ward too. You know, Hines Ward, yeah. Super Bowl MVP, 1,000 receptions, a bunch of touchdowns. But I think because of the way the NFL is going, there's going to be so many wide receivers with better numbers that, you know, people are, you know, that's the first thing that people look at is the numbers. They don't take into account that, you know, Hines Ward was taking out players setting up touchdown runs with his vicious blocks too. So
yeah, absolutely.
We'll see if that happens. But I want to say thank you, Jake, for stopping by. I had to wake up a little bit early to get you on, but totally worth it. And thanks so much for coming by. And check him out on FNTSY. He's got his rankings coming out soon. And your rankings are the only ones I use. You can't go anywhere else. So that's the ones I use for my offseason. I'm like, where does Jake have this guy? Let me look at this. So if you're drafting now and you're an insane person like we are, we just started, fired up our first mock of the offseason. And if you're doing that, Jake is the man. You got to go find his rankings. Check the link. You can find it on his Twitter at All In Kid. Thanks so much for stopping by.
Thanks.
Prospect One.
So about 20 minutes after the report hits, Chavis drops a personal message on Twitter. A lot of guys will do stuff like this. This is the longest one I've ever seen. It's over 4 paragraphs.
It usually must be the most sincere then.
Here's just like a little snippet of some of the stuff he said. He goes, today I am faced with the reality that I will be suspended under Major League, blah, blah, blah. I like this. He's like, over the past several months, I've been searching for an answer to how a prohibited substance I've never heard of, DHMCT, which, you know, was detected in my urine during the offseason. He says it's unfortunate. He says he fully supports a drug system. It's really painful to see that he's now in it. This is something that I took to heart when he said this. I thought this was at least telling in the response. He says, anyone that knows me as their son, brother, teammate, player, or friend is aware of how deeply I love this game and who I am as a person. They also know that I would never jeopardize my career and the integrity of the game or disrespect myself or my family by purposely taking a banned substance. Finally, they know how drug and alcohol have personally affected my family, so much so that I have never tried either of them in my entire life. So he's kind of admitting to, you know, personal struggle in you know, that area, which I have had, not me personally, but I have had in my family. Personal stuff go on there. He goes on. He talks about he, you know, wants to do everything he can to try to repair his relationship. It's a long thing. And I think, I mean, you see that in it. The initial reaction is it's pandering. Let's just call a spade a spade. The initial reaction is it's pandering. We saw that. Didn't Gregory Polanco or Starling Marte or somebody get one of those? And it was just so, it was like,
well,
a paragraph.
Polanco never tested positive.
Not
that
Polanco.
Was Marte.
Who am I? Was it Marte?
Yeah, it was Starling Marte.
Completely insincere.
Well, you know
insincere.
Who did the most famous version of this? And this is why no one buys it. And this is probably why you're getting, like, I'm, to be honest, I'm impressed that you still have the wherewithal. Because to me, it sounds like you're kind of buying it. Are you kind of buying it or no?
I don't know. I think there. I don't know exactly.
Even the fact that you say that to me means that you aren't completely jaded like a lot of other people are. He's a lying liar. You know, Ryan Braun is a lying cheater. And that was the guy. That was the last guy where I was like, well,
you're saying Chavis is a lying liar.
He's a lying liar.
Oh, okay.
And Ryan Braun is kind of the last straw for me.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
In This League Overtime. Want more? Go to inthisleague.com. Here's Bogman and the Welsh.
Obviously, personally for you and me, it digs a little deeper because he was on those horse steroids when he hit five bombs against the Diamondbacks in the playoffs.
You know, Boggs, it's really interesting that you're saying this because that's not something I had thought about because at first I was just going to say, well, okay, what? Like, so Ryan Braun jaded you, but I know what you're talking about because Ryan Braun dug his heels into
like he had Aaron Rodgers backing him up because they both play in the Milwaukee area. He was trying to get all these people on his side, and then he tested positive again. And you know, at that point, he's just a lying liar.
That's a great point.
Scumbag.
That is. I mean, hey, listen, man, that is a great point. That dude dug his heels in Ryan Braun, and he did not. And furthermore, he screwed up the integrity of the dude who got the sample.
Yeah,
he threw that guy into the bus. So he was a scumbag, absolute scumbag. Listen, dude, I think there is question in general because there is a part of me that does have the belief out there that there are so many over-the-counter natural supplements that have so much crap in it that could they kick off some of this stuff? I do think it's possible. Could there be stuff in meat? I don't know. It's possible. Do I buy... 90?
Could there be aliens? It's possible.
It's possible.
It is a possibility. I can't say for a fact there are no aliens.
Some of the unique stuff, though, like I think there was like some player that was like, you know, tainted meat or something like that. Like that's pretty far-fetched.
Right. Dude. Yeah.
And listen, there is so much going into everything nowadays. I do think it is possible there are traces of certain things that kick off some of these tests in other elements. So I'm saying that. Here's the other thing I'm saying. I think Hold on.
Okay.
I think it is idiotic for anybody, to not know what you're putting in your body, even if it's an accident. It could be a total. You could have gone and got some blue green algae. You could have got some, you know, Men's multivitamin by Garden of Life or whatever, and putting that in you when your job is put on the line based on the things that you put in your body. Guess what? Mine isn't. I can put all types of horrible stuff in my body. Guess what? I do. So do you. When your job is based on the things that you put inside your body, you should know everything. I would take every supplement I have and I would go to MLB and I would get written confirmation that this is something that I can have. Can I have this? Is this okay? I would have everything tested. So that's me. Could it be a mistake? Yes, it could. But therein lies to me, there is a window to say that I think some of these guys could get mistakenly put to
it. Here's okay. So I'm looking at, this is the same stuff that Chris Colabello got popped for. And there's an SB Nation article. It says by Dang You to Heck. I don't know who that is, but this is an SB Nation article. And this says, you know, what is on the first part, a little history of what this crap is. The DM, whatever this name is known as Oral Turnabol. As the name implies, it is taken as a pill. It was developed and patented in 1961 by East German Pharmaceutical Company and used as a performance-enhancing anabolic steroid for decades. It's one of those PEDs that's mainly responsible for all those communist gold medals handed out from then until tests were developed to detect it. Now, why no one should be taking this crap, he goes on to say, first, these days, it's not made by a pharmaceutical company anymore. It was discontinued as a sanitarily produced, quality-controlled dose accurate compound back in 1994. It is only available through black market labs. So,
okay.
I mean, someone still could have slipped this to him. You know, one of his trainers could have put it in a shake or something along those lines. So it's not something that you have to inject into your body like all those horse steroids that Ryan Braun was taking. But it is something that, you know, if you're taking it, it's most likely you know what you're taking.
I mean, and that probably goes to the suspension. And I'm okay with that. Like I said, I'm not here and I'm jaded in it because I have I don't really have a relationship, but I've seen the guy, I've been around the guy. I personally have been a proponent of him, you know, in my prospect rankings.
Yeah,
he's been a sleeper guy. I like the guy. The first thing I tweeted out when I saw this was I couldn't be more disappointed in this. This sucks. Okay. Then I read the statement and I just here's what I said. I said,
you want to pull for these guys.
You want to pull for these guys. I thought, and I don't know what you think, and obviously you hate all of them, and that's totally fine. I thought the length of the letter and there was some candid stuff in there, and maybe it was me when he talked about the personal struggle in his family with drug addiction and not going there. That meant something. I don't know what it meant. Does it mean he wouldn't do it? No, sure. Some guy could be like, okay, I'm more motivated to get more money so I can make sure my family's taken care of. Sure, there's a thousand things. So I don't think one way or another. But what I said is I quote tweeted his response, and I said, pretty powerful response to the suspension.
Right.
Is that wrong? I'm going to start there. Okay.
No.
Okay, so
that's
stop there.
Right.
I thought it was a powerful response to the suspension because it wasn't a sentence. It wasn't through a lawyer. It was through him on his Twitter account on like a term paper, this looked like. I follow. I say, a lot is covered here, way more than most would. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Finally, I said, good to see Michael Chavis, and I added him, facing it head on. Right?
Maybe.
Okay. He could
be dancing. You know, this could be.
It head on mean to you? Because I got called out on.
Well,
that
it depends.
Comment.
It depends. If this could be facing it head on, the Welsh. This could be. You know, hey, look, I didn't do this. I don't know how this got into my system. I think this was a bad test. I absolutely did not do this. And we find out that, you know, some trainer put something in his, you know, in his drink. I gave that up because this isn't an injectable steroid. So this absolutely could have been slipped to him. But if he did do it and he knows he did it, he's dancing and he's not facing it head on. He's hiding. Whereas it would be much better to just say, you know what, I got caught.
Okay, well,
I apologize to my family, all that garbage. So I just don't know.
If he's lying, he's lying.
I'm
not arguing that. And I'm not saying anything about that, to be frank. I'm not saying, is he lying, is he not? I didn't say, good to see Michael Chavis proving his innocence. Good to see Michael Chavis shutting the haters up. I'm saying it's good to see Michael Chavis facing it head on. Because he's not hiding. He's responding to it. I'm not. Now, is he lying? He could be lying. That's very likely.
He's definitely responding to it.
But he is facing it head on, which is a response. All right, let's talk about this on the other side of the break. We'll finish up some more. More Michael Chavis talk. And I'll tell you, because guess what? He responded to me. So we'll talk about that.
I just want to read this line, because this was another line that I didn't get to read. This is the same article from 2016 after Colabello got popped for this stuff.
Okay, so just a recap. Colabello got popped for the same stuff that Chavis just got popped for.
Right.
Okay.
And the SB Nation, one of the Blue Jays writers called Dang You to Heck, That's his name on this article anyway. He wrote a long article about this drug in particular, and he talked about how it went out in 1994 and you had to get it through black markets. This is pretty intense here. You stand an excellent chance of poisoning yourself or becoming stupidly stomach sick on this stuff. Then should you actually get some of the real thing in a dose that's correct and won't render you confined to your bathroom with the scours, you stand an excellent chance of destroying your liver. Dehydrochylamethylcysterone is well known to be very hard on the liver, and many on the Eastern Bloc athletes dosed with it, often without their knowledge, suffered hepatic liver and renal kidney failure in later life as a result. Few lived long, full lives after being on a regime of this stuff.
It's intense, man. That's very, very intense stuff.
And I just want to point out that I'm not like – I don't know if this guy – and I gave up the point that, you know, this is a pill. So could someone have slipped it to him? Absolutely. I just don't – this is one of the very few things where you're just guilty until proven innocent as far as the court of public opinion.
Sure.
And it's just because the fact that most guys are guilty.
And sometimes, you know what I mean? And sometimes to go further, it's not about till you're proven innocent. It's just till you're proven forgotten. Till people forget.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's
no one's talking about Starling Marte.
I had no idea that Colabello did this. I mean, people are still talking about Marte. That was just last year.
Yeah, but I mean, people are just talking about how the Pirates.
No one will remember this in 5 years anyway that Chavis did this, unless he gets popped again.
Yeah, no, 100%.
So, it didn't get into his body by accident, and it wasn't. I'm not saying that he didn't. That he definitely knew that he was taking it, but someone knew they were giving it to him. You know, so if he has a trainer, he's got to cut all those people out of his life.
100%.
Because someone did this. I mean, it would be just like someone poisoning you. I mean,
or,
you just read this. If you're not dosed right, this stuff can kill you.
Or like you said, he's just a liar, you know, or he's just simply lying about the fact of guilt.
The last guy that maintains his innocence, I think, is Roger Clemens. I don't think many other guys.
Yeah, he's held on to that. Yeah, you're right about that. So at the end of the day, like you said, we're in this state where your comparison was perfect of, this is a Ryan Braun state. It could be, in theory.
It is for me. I just feel completely jaded and feel I felt lied to.
Not in the same fashion, but more than I've seen a player in a while. Long letter and got personal with personal things in his family and really hit home. And he did it 20 minutes after the report was in. I mean, he was ready to go. And furthermore, he responded to many people, and people were not nice, of course. The internet was slamming, and he's kind of a religious guy, and he was putting some stuff up there. So like I said, I think I'm one of the first people or whatever to kind of quote tweet it. I probably wasn't, by the way, but I quote tweeted it with just my comments. And like I said, pretty powerful response to the suspension. I think it's accurate. A lot is covered here. It's accurate. Way more than most accurate. Good to see Michael Chavis facing it head on. Because I felt that he's not hiding from it. I didn't say you're not guilty or you're innocent. Good for you for blah, blah, blah. I just said you're facing it head on because you're going on Twitter. You wrote a freaking page about it and you're getting personal. And I thought the stuff about the family stuff was very personal. He responded pretty quickly after I quote tweeted this. And he liked and retweeted my thing. So if you go there, I'm one of his top ones. And he said, I have nothing to hide. I know the truth and would do anything to prove it to everyone else. I don't know how this happened, but I will show that what I've accomplished was all me. That was his response to me.
First of all, it's wild that he responded to you, but I feel like maybe, you know, I think it does build a little bit more case towards him that he is responding to people saying stuff like this. Now, what I'm trying to do right now is I'm looking for... will you do me a favor, since people respond to you and everyone hates me? Why don't you send a DM, or not a DM, but a tweet to Chris Colabello and say, do you have any comments on Michael Chavis's situation?
I don't even know if he's on Twitter.
He is. I'm looking at it right here. So here, well, I'll send it to him.
Okay. Yeah, you sent it to him.
I mean, I'm gonna look like a silly goose when he doesn't say anything.
Yeah, but it's fine. I mean, he's not going to respond to you right now, but maybe you'll get a response.
I don't think he'll respond to me at all, but I'm just going to ask him.
The responses were different. some towards me, some towards him. There's a lot of, you know, his fans or whatever that obviously probably saw the retweets were, you know, they were for him. You know, heads up, buddy. This will pass. God bless. That, you know, blah, blah. But
well, he's not a criminal or anything. Like, and I... For a long time, I held real hatred for cheaters. I mean, I'm still going to call them cheaters because, you know, guys that do this, they're cheating. But, you know, this is a mistake. Even if he did it on purpose, it's a mistake. And he's a young man and he has time to make up for it and become a better person. So even if he did do it, he's not evil. You know, he's just a kid that made
it. He's a nice guy. By the way, he's a nice guy. So this was one of them. He said, this guy quote tweets me, he goes, facing it head on, good golly. I like that he said golly. He denies everything as per usual and shields himself behind, quote, God. Pity. Comes into league with a strike against him and always tainted by that. Hopefully he can learn from this. What was the strike against him that he came into the league? I don't know that.
Well, I think this is the strike against him.
Oh, I thought there was maybe another one. So he was saying that hopefully he can learn from this. I will say I did offer for him to come on Prospect One. I said, okay. As you know, it says, also, I know you're responding to people. I have a platform with my show, Prospect One. If you'd like to speak your piece on it, glad to have you on, but get while you work. So, you know, there's an open invitation. Like I think I said it in that. You're welcome to come on. And he didn't respond. I don't assume he's going to respond, but it's out there. I put it out there, and he's more than welcome. I said, I got a platform. There is a platform here, whether it's the platform that he'd want. I mean, you could easily just go off to MILB or talk to Jonathan Mayo or something like that. You could do that. But, you know, I think I was one of the first people he responded to, and it's an open door. So if you got questions, obviously, about Michael Chavis and how to deal with it, you can ask me as far as a fantasy perspective. Huge blow to fantasy. But let's talk about some of the big performances. Let's kind of move through that a little bit and talk about what happened in the first couple games opening up for the minor league season, because it's killer. It's a killer time of the year, and you get a lot of, I don't know if you call it confirmation bias or something like that, but it's early on. Overreacting one way or another, I think, you have to be calculated in it. You don't want to overreact because of a poor performance. Gabriel Arias, he went 0-for-4 with, I think, 2 strikeouts in his first game. It's okay. Like, maybe that's going to continue, and you have to monitor it, but we can cool our jets a little bit. And unfortunately, and I'll cop to this, maybe this is one of those things where you see, you know, the positive, and you focus more on the positive, and you're like, ah, don't worry about that negative. Maybe it's not fair. But for me, I want to take a look, and I want to focus, because we can't focus on the negative. I want to focus on the positive results. Some pitchers had some really good stuff, but some hitters came out slamming to start, and I think it's important to focus on. But the first was, I think the very first game of the minor league season that opened up was the Oklahoma City Dodgers were going, and Walker Buehler was the start. And I think they were doing a doubleheader, but Walker Buehler started that first game. I missed the first inning. I jumped in on the second inning, and man, Buehler is just, that dude is something else. He is fantastic to watch. His fastball was just popping in. He's got really good life to it. He was zipping that in, 96, 97. Hitters were having fits, and he just buckles that curveball. I mean, it's reminiscent of the stuff I talked about with, like, Mackenzie Gore. You know, I mean, Mackenzie Gore's curve actually might be, it bites a bit more, I think he might throw it a tick slower than Buehler, but there's life on it. You know, it's kind of the same life, just buckling curveballs. Buehler has a pretty good slider. He wasn't getting swings on it, but in the game, so he goes in, first batter, I don't remember who the batters were, but strikeout on the fastball. He just knee buckle strikes out the next hitter on a curveball. And then the next hitter, because they're playing against the Cubs. Oh, this is the Iowa Cubs. That's it. My guy, David Bodie. You remember, you know, me and Bodie watching his home run at the Fall Stars game. Bodie comes up and he rockets one. And I think it was off of the curveball that was thrown. And I thought it was a homer. It looked like he destroyed it. It ended up being like a ground rule double, because it went like into the back of a sign or something. I didn't see it bounce. I think it actually literally might have landed before going over the wall, it went into the sign, and he avoided giving up a home run, which was nice. But his final total, he went 4, struck out 5, walked 1, only gave up 3 hits with 1 earned run. I thought Walker Buehler looked fantastic, and he is definitely on his way for a rotation spot sooner rather than later. So Walker Buehler, mwah.
This was In This League Overtime. Some of the best from the In This League podcasts. Looking for more? Visit InThisLeague.com right now.